If tomorrow starts without me, there's something you should know. While I hold you close, never let you go.
Hello and welcome to The Broken Pack, a podcast focused on giving adult survivors of sibling loss a platform to share their stories and to be heard, something that many sibling loss survivors state that they never have had. Sibling loss is misunderstood. The Broken Pack exists to change that and to support survivors. I'm your host, Dr. Angela Dean. Today's episode features sibling loss survivor and author Lindsay. We spoke about losing Stuart unexpectedly to suicide and how she is coping now, as well as how she continues to share her brother with her children.
I'm guessing, 'cause you never know, you just never know.
Content warning. Information presented in this episode may be triggering to some people. It contains talk of suicide. Thank you for joining me today. I will let you introduce yourself to our listeners.
Hi, my name is Lindsay and I'm from the UK.
Before we get into the story of losing your brother, what do you want us to know about you?
What do I want you to know about me? It's my 50th birthday next year and I'm a mum to 6-year-old twins, one of each boy and girl. And yeah, I'm now an only sibling, but I'm not an only sibling because my brother's still around in spirit, but I don't have any other living brothers or sisters.
Thank you for that. It's always interesting to think about how we talk about our siblings now that they're gone. And some people have very strong feelings about that. Stuart or Stu?
I used to call him Stuart, occasionally Stu, but most of his friends knew him as Stu or Stew Pot.
Stew.
So you can call him whatever you wish.
All right. What was Stuart like?
Oh, very tall, had the most beautiful eyes, dark, deep brown eyes. And when he had hair, his hair was deep, dark and brown as well. And then over the years, that started to recede. And then, yeah, he pretty much didn't have much on top. When we were little, I always thought I was adopted because there's me, very white, pale skinned, blue eyes, white hair. And I never thought we looked alike. Mm-hmm. But now I can see some similarities. But it's weird. Ever since sort of being a little girl, I just felt that we looked so different. But we've always had the closest bond. Even if we hadn't seen each other ages, we just had this bond where we just knew we were there in this world together, looking out for each other. And yeah, he's the biggest heart, the most kind-hearted, warm-hearted individual, always looking out for others, going out of his way to help others. Such a good sense of humor. Really did see the positive in everything. When somebody else was feeling down or in a bad place, he would be the one that would pick them up, get them to see the positive, get them to just move into a better state of mind. He was amazing with people, had such a good way of communicating and compassion and empathizing with others, particularly good with the elderly as well. For some reason, the elderly warmed to him a lot. They had a lot of trust in him and he loved to hear about their stories from when they were younger. He would spend a lot of time listening to them. And I think they really appreciated that. Yeah, absolutely. My hero, just best brother in the world.
Sounds like he made you feel heard, just like he made the elderly feel heard. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the age difference?
Only 2 years. And our birthdays are side by side. So my birthday is the 28th of April and Stuart's birthday is the 29th of April. I was the birthday present for him on his second birthday. Mum and Dad, here you go. There's your little sister. Happy birthday. And I've got the most gorgeous photographs of us as me, just newborn and little Stew with his little baby sister. But he really did take on that responsibility, that role of being the big brother. And yeah, he used to call me pea head. Because when I was little, I had such white hair and a little round head. And for some reason, he thought I looked like a pea. He called me pea head. So I said, in that case, you're King Pea because you're my brother and you're older than me. So it's just one of those silly, funny things that we always used to say. And yeah, he was very protective of me. And I love that. I love that that's how a big brother should be.
Did those nicknames stick through adulthood as well?
Yeah. I remember 1 year, about 10 years ago, he got me a birthday card with lots of little peas on. But yeah, his humour just love his humor and cheekiness.
What do you want to share about losing Stuart?
I think losing him is the most devastating feeling in the world. To think, I can remember going back to receiving that phone call, and I couldn't get my head around where he was, because for 46 years of my life, he's always been here. Even if I couldn't physically see him, I knew he was somewhere an hour down the road, or if he was traveling overseas on a holiday, I knew he was still here on Earth. He was physically here, and I could message him, or I could call him, or I could text him. But when I heard the news, I just could not get my head around him not being here. And I remember looking up to the sky and thinking, where are you then? Where have you gone? And I spent so many evenings in those early days looking up, trying to find him and wondering where he was. And the world shifted. The world completely changed. And it hasn't been the same since. It's really difficult to put into words how his loss feels. As I'm sure you know.
Yes, unfortunately. So I know that you wrote your story in the book. What do you want to say about the book? And then we'll go from there.
So my book that I wrote, it started off with me just writing how I was feeling in those first 4 or 5 months. I find writing is so cathartic. It really helped me to express what was going on in my head and in my heart. And I felt that it was my heart was just pouring out onto the pages, or as I was typing, it was really coming from somewhere deep within. And as I continued writing, I then felt that I was talking to others, that I was then relating and connecting to others and sharing how I was feeling. I felt that others could read this and feel the connection too, and it would relate to how they're feeling, and it would help to normalize their grief journey. So it ended up becoming a book. And when I think back now, I don't know how I did it, but in those early days, we're running on adrenaline. We are living the effects of shock, of trauma. And that's what kept me going. That's how I was able to keep going with my writing. If I think about doing it now, and I am writing my second book, and I think this is why I'm delayed in publishing it, is because I get that other voice coming to me now saying, oh, we can't write that. You can't say this. Oh, does that sound right? Whereas before, when I wrote my first book, What Suicide Left Behind, everything just flowed from the heart. And I said it how I felt it. And I didn't judge myself or critique myself. I just went with it and it felt right. So I really want to get back into that with my second book, because as time has gone by, because we're now 3 years since my brother passed, I'm now more aware of other people's opinions and thoughts about suicide and loss and grief. And I've become a little bit more guarded as to what I say, whereas before, I just said it how it was.
It does read very much like it is a personal journal. And so it does draw you in. And I did feel connected to your story and to you as I was reading it. Because you've written it, and I know many of our listeners probably have not read it, because one of the things that is hard to find are books on sibling law. Thank you for writing it. I'm wondering if you want to share a little bit more about what happened.
Sure. So going back to the pandemic, and the last time I saw my brother in person was actually at Christmas time. So Christmas before 2020. And then the pandemic hit in March. And so we were texting and FaceTiming lots. And yeah, we got to June, and I had a phone call from my brother's partner, and she said, have you heard from your brother? And as soon as she said those words, I just felt something was deeply wrong, because it was just the weirdest phone call. And we spoke for about an hour and came to the conclusion that we needed to contact the police, because he had actually been missing since the morning before. And she called me the following evening. And so he became a missing persons, which I still can't get my head around. And yeah, we had the police search team, search and rescue, helicopters trying to search for him. And 2 days later, I had a phone call from the police to say his car had been found at the side of the forest, Ashdown Forest, which, if you know the story of Winnie the Pooh, the connection with Ashdown Forest. And they said, does he have any connections to here? And I said, not really, no. It's about 20 minutes from my home. And I asked if I could go and search for him. And they said, no, not at the moment. But I felt completely helpless. I needed to get out and find my brother because this was just so out of the blue, out of the ordinary. It was the next day, the following evening at 6:40 p.m. And I can remember every single detail, the weather outside, what I was doing, what I was wearing. And I received that phone call. And as soon as the police officer said to me, are you at home? Is somebody with you? I knew he was about to deliver something that I didn't want to hear. He said those words that I'm so sorry, we have found your brother. And I'm afraid he's, I won't mention how, but they described how he had passed. And I can just remember saying no, screaming no down the phone and running down the stairs to my husband, who was in the garden, handing the phone over to him. And yeah, that was the pivotal moment in life where everything changed. I changed, my world changed. And my immediate concern was for our parents. They are in their 80s. They live about an hour's drive from me. And my immediate concern was they cannot be told by a police officer turning up at their front door to say their firstborn, their son, who they had the most, especially mum, had such a close relationship with. I just couldn't let them be in that position. So I told my husband to just jump in the car, get down there first and be with them, which he did. And I got him to stay overnight with them as well, because I felt they couldn't be on their own. And so I left myself alone in the house with my three-year-old twins. They were three at the time, which they were a distraction in a way, because I still had to be mummy and focus on them and making sure they got off to bed. But I felt afraid to be alone in the house overnight. So even though we were in the pandemic and there was the lockdowns, the restrictions, I called a friend and asked her to come over and be with me because I just was scared and felt alone. And she did. And I don't care what all the regulations were with the pandemic, I needed somebody to come into the house and be with me. And it was very strange to think that's 3 years ago now, and yet it still feels like only a few months ago. That's the thing, I think, with trauma and shock and grief. It's such a process. It's such a journey. And we don't just get up and move on. It's with us forever. And it's learning how we navigate our way through this so that we do continue living, but we're living very much in a different place now.
Yeah. What month was that?
June 2020.
The pandemic restrictions, and I think your restrictions were probably stricter than ours here, I recall. It's curious, and I know part of this is because of my own story. My brother passed in the pandemic as well. And their grief does have a strange timeline. This is just more of a ponderance. I wonder how much not being able to have that connection in person with people influenced our grief timelines. And I guess there's ways to study that, but right now we don't know. I wonder if you felt that grieving and isolation was hard.
Yeah, I think that's probably why I have grieved openly online. That was my way of speaking to the world. It's almost like I wanted to voice how this felt. I felt this wasn't something I could do in private or keep hidden away, or because so often you hear of families when they've lost a loved one to respect their privacy and they want to not be disturbed, or and I was the complete opposite. And I understand everybody deals with grief differently. I totally get that. For me personally, I felt I needed to let people know just how devastating this is, and that it's not just happening to one or two people. This is happening to a lot of people. this in itself, a pandemic where suicide loss is happening too often to too many people and all different ages. We're talking very young children as well. Devastating. Mm-hmm. I think I felt that my brother throughout his life bottled up things too much.
Mm-hmm.
The message I feel that he left me was, sister, don't bottle anything up. Do not bottle anything up. And so I took that message, and that is why I've openly shared my grief journey online to help others, to let them feel that it's okay for them to express how they feel, to use their voice if they wish to, and that what they're going through, other people are going through it as well. It's finding your community, finding people who you can relate to. And it's so powerful to connect with others who are on a very similar journey, to just have that support and that understanding. And it makes such a huge difference, because feeling so alone in the pandemic, I could have just retreated within, closed the doors, closed the curtain. And I feel that I could have ended up in a very bad place as well. So I did the complete opposite and just opened up everything and shared. Yeah. And I look back now and think, how did I do that? And that's the thing, we're doing it because we're in so much shock, the adrenaline, the cortisol. We're doing it for survival for ourselves. And yeah, the world was a very unusual place during the pandemic. And I think now we're still very much dealing with the effect, the after effect. And I've quietened down my grief journey online because, like I said earlier, with the book and with my writing, I feel my judging voice is now coming in and critiquing me and saying, perhaps you shouldn't do that. And I feel I need to quieten that down again and start being more open and sharing again. I've just gone through a quiet reflection stage, I think.
So you said that the one thing that you learned from your brother was to not do that, to not bottle things up. Were you like that before his death?
Yes. And I think it actually, our entire family and my parents are from that generation where stiff upper lip and be British and keep calm and carry on, put on a happy face. And yeah, we are all guilty of bottling things up and not sharing. So I broke the mold and started to share. And it's very freeing, and it allows you to offload so much. And I think what my brother, yeah, how much he must have bottled up and kept inside, and particularly for men, they are told, man up, get on with it, and they can't show their emotions. And that's something I'm so passionate about now, is saying and helping the men in our world, in our communities, that it's okay for them to speak up. It's okay for them to cry. It's okay for them to share. And I really do mean that, because I know we see so many memos online and where it's all about, it's okay to share, it's okay to talk. Sometimes it's just words, but I come from a place where I actively want to make sure that men do feel that they can have their say and ask for help, because my brother would never ask for help.
Yeah, it's amazing, because as a professional, I often, when men come into the office, that's the first thing. They're thankful that everything here is confidential, but then they're also concerned about, are they normal, because they're having emotions. So I think that is an important message that we can help with, the various gender norms that exist. Your parents are still living.
Yes, they are, yes.
Yeah.
And they're incredible.
Awesome. How has this affected your relationship with them?
It's brought us closer together. Prior to Stuart passing, we were never a huggy family. We never hugged one another, or we were just, again, terribly British and very formal sometimes, almost too much. And but now it's definitely brought us closer. And we've always been a very close little family of mum, dad, me and Stuart. That little family unit is so special, and we definitely had that bond, that connection, that unit that was us, and everything we've been through together, the good times, the not so good times, that we had more good times than not good times. But we were always, always there for one another. And I think now you can see the loss of how it's absolutely devastated their world. And I think I am so blessed that I've got the twins to help them through this, because having grandchildren for them is such a blessing. Stuart unfortunately never had children. So it's his line has stopped. There's now no more of Stuart in that respect. But I do feel that there is some similarities with my children, his niece and nephew, that they're able to carry on some characteristics of Stu, and they keep him alive. They speak about him every day. He's very much part of our life. Mm-hmm. And that helps mum and dad so much.
Do they remember him?
Yeah, kind of. So they were 3.5 at the time. Obviously, they've got photograph and videos. Mm-hmm. I haven't got many, but, and I, this is the one wish, I wish I had have taken more videos and photos, but I'm just so grateful for the ones that I do have. My little girl said the other day, she said, I sort of remember him, but I can't remember his voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I would play a video so they can hear the voice, his voice. But I think they're more, think of him now more the teddy bear, weirdly, because Stu Bear, Uncle Stu Bear, has been such a key part of their life from July 2020 when we got him, that he was there for their first day at school. Whenever they've gone to different appointments, doctors, dentists, Stu Bear always goes with them. When they go to see their friends, Stu Bear always goes with them. When we go on the train, in the car journeys, at night time, my little girl always hugs him.
Mm-hmm.
So she's got a different, I don't know, not memory, but there's a relationship with Stu. Mm-hmm.
And for our listeners that can't see the bear behind you, do you want to describe Stu Bear?
So we had him specially made, one for me, one for mum, and one for each of the twins. And he's made up of my brother's favorite shirts.
Mm.
And the shirt, the one that you can see in the background, that's the shirt that he was wearing when he was a missing person. We had to give police a photograph, and he was wearing that shirt.
Mm.
It was a photo that was taken about 2 months before he died.
Mm.
And it's checkered. It's blue, white and black checkered. And then there's another pale blue shirt for the tummy area. There's a blue heart, which is made from his jeans, his denim jeans. And then his ears are made from his stripy socks. They're beautiful colours. And they're odd socks. He always used to love wearing odd socks, which my little boy actually carries on that tradition.
Makes it easier on laundry day.
Yeah. And then there's also a little pocket at the back, so I can pop little notes in as well, which is really sweet. Yeah. And then on his paws, he's got just embroidered Stu. And I might add to that, I think now I'd quite like to put a little message or something on the other paw. So I'll get the lady who made them just to sew something else on there. But each of the Stu bears are all very unique, all different. Mm-hmm. And my little girl's one is, it's coming away at the seams. He's got the white shirt in the middle, and that's getting quite grubby. And I have actually had to put him in the washing machine. And I did feel a bit bad thinking, oh, I'm putting my brother in the washing machine, but it was quite a funny moment. And he came out beautifully clean and sparkly. And I'm sure I can just imagine Stuart absolutely laughing his socks off. And we also got some little hearts made for his friends as well, so they could put those in their cars or at home. On the Christmas tree, just some little fabric hearts, again made from some of his shirt. Doing things like that has really helped. It really does make a difference.
It sounds like that's a great way for you to stay connected to him, but also for him to have a presence in your kids' lives that he would have otherwise had. Yeah.
So important. He's their only uncle. It's so important that we keep him very much alive and as a guardian, an angel, or whatever we want to call him. Just because he's physically not here, he's still very much around in spirit and in our minds and in our hearts. And he's spoken about so much. And they look up to him. They absolutely love him. And it's such a blessing.
So I have to ask you about something you said, because I don't want to make assumptions. You said that your family was very British. And I think here, there's an assumption of what that means, but I wanted to clarify what you meant by that.
Well, the British, not all of us, but yeah, we're quite reserved people. We have to do things in a certain way and we don't share. We don't always wear our heart on our sleeve, or we're always very polite and thinking of the other person and putting a smile on our face and keeping calm and carrying on no matter what happens. And I think that's how I sum up being British.
Okay. I think given that we were just talking about the stew bear and I can see the heart made out of his clothes, it's almost like an intentional way for you to start sharing your emotions, wearing your heart on your sleeve a little bit more, if you will, because it's all his clothes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Feels like a children's book in there. Thank you for clarifying that. That's what I thought you meant, but I wanted to ask. It sounds like you had initial support from your friend, who quite lovely was able to engage and decide, yes, you and supporting you was more important than the restriction. Where else did you find support in those early days?
I was very fortunate in that I have a lot of friendship groups. When I was pregnant with the twins, I connected with six other pregnant mums and we've kept that group going. So even though we couldn't see each other during the pandemic, we were very much keeping in touch online. So they were one of the first that I messaged and their support, just messaging, was incredible. In fact, one of the mums the very next day drove around with some food ready made. She'd made a lovely dish, though I didn't have to cook, and some cake. And another friend from that group brought round a bag of toys for the children to play with to keep them distracted. And that absolutely blew me away, the kindness to do that. And for them to break some of the rules, sort of restrictions, to come and do that was incredible. I did get a lot of messages online, almost overwhelming, lots and lots. And I connected with a couple of my brother's friends who I didn't really know, his best friends. And we were speaking a lot on the telephone and messaging. Obviously, my brother's partner as well, I was very concerned for her. So we were connecting a lot. But again, it was all very much on the phone or through text. And I think that when I went online to find out, what do I do next? What support is there? And I didn't really find a lot.
Right.
I got completely overwhelmed, completely lost. And I found it quite stressful because there just wasn't an instant place to go to. There wasn't. I just had no idea. And the police didn't give us any support. They pretty much gave us the news and that was it. And we were then expected to navigate where we go from here. So yeah, searching online, there were a few places, but for some reason I didn't like what they'd written or how it came across. It just didn't sit right with how I was feeling. And so I ended up creating my own community. I ended up just connecting with others online who've been through the same journey at the same sort of time period and just brought people together. I found that bringing people together gave me something positive to do. And I really wanted to do something positive and helpful and to feel like I was doing something good. Because on the other side of that, I was the one dealing with my brother's affairs and financial affairs and dealing with the funeral, which in itself was awful that we could only invite 20 people.
Oh, wow.
There were hundreds that wanted to come and say their farewells. And even dealing with arranging the funeral director, I didn't have a clue how to do that. Mm-hmm. I was completely lost. And I wasn't aware that I could have gone to see my brother, but I'd left it too late. And then the funeral director said, it's really not appropriate for you to see him now. So I had to see him in a closed casket, which I can understand. I think that was probably for the best. But at the time, I was so confused. I just desperately wanted to see him because I didn't believe he was in there. So I ended up spending a lot of time connecting with others and then listening to how others are feeling and what they needed and what was missing and a lot of the problems they were going through of finding there wasn't the help. And I felt I needed some release because day in, day out, I was talking suicide loss, grief, and it was getting quite heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So I created an online choir where we just came together once a week just to have half an hour of escapism, to sing, to just express ourselves through singing. And we found that, I think we did that for about 6 months. It's a little bit tricky doing it online because obviously with Zoom and feedback and stuff, but it was so nice to be amongst a community with people going through the same thing, but we were able to just find a way to express ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that was so powerful.
Was it a choir for people that were also grieving?
It was just purely just bringing others who had lost loved ones to suicide.
Mm.
And we would say the name of our loved ones. We would talk about them and then we would sing a few songs and just have that time to just switch off from the trauma, from the devastation and real life, and have half an hour away from it. Mm-hmm. And it's really helpful. And then I also did online craft workshops as well with a friend who is an artist, just to help people, again, be creative, do something practical, and to get them focused on doing something else for half an hour or an hour to just escape real life and have some time to just switch off. And again, that was so therapeutic. And then I did a room on Clubhouse. So have you heard of Clubhouse?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, called Life After Suicide Loss. And that was, again, once a week. And we'd all come together and we would speak and share our stories, share any sort of advice or anything that anyone was going through. We'd just talk. We would just simply talk. And we found that, I think I did that for about 18 months. Again, that was really effective and it brought people together. And a lot of people have said how much that's helped them, knowing that there's somewhere as an outlet where they're amongst those who understand. And again, it's all about not bottling up and about using your voice and sharing and expressing emotions. So, but then I got to the point where I felt, okay, I'm overdoing it again. I'm doing too much. So I stopped doing the Clubhouse. And now I do occasional podcasts. But it's, as I said, I've now, the last sort of 6 months, I've gone through a very quiet period of reflecting. And I know it's all part of the journey.
Yeah. I hear that you're a busy mom. Do you also work outside of the home?
I work, yeah. I'm actually a trauma therapist.
Oh, okay.
Which is, again, the amount of guilt that I felt at the start to think my brother, well, both my husband and I, we run our own trauma therapy clinic. And to think that Stuart couldn't even come to one of us the help. And we, both Chris and I, have helped so many people who have attempted suicide or having suicidal thoughts. We have helped them through that.
Right.
Yet couldn't help my brother.
Well, it's so much harder to be objective with our own family members. And I think sometimes people don't understand that about us as therapists or psychologists, is that there are limits, right? We're human too and have relationships.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I think people look at therapists of everything in your life must be perfect.
Sorry.
No, it's all positive. It's all good and it's all roses and there's nothing wrong at all. And I think that's the other thing, me being very open online and going through such a complex and complicated grief journey. And even though I am a therapist myself, this is real life. This is real. Mm-hmm. And I'm being authentically me. And this is how it is. And I think that the message I'm getting across is like, we are human.
Mm-hmm. We'll be back after a quick break.
Hi, I'm Dr. Angela Dean, host of the Broken Pack podcast. If you've lost a sibling, you viscerally understand the complexity of your loss and how isolating it can feel. Sibling loss is misunderstood. And that's why I created an in-person retreat called the Sibling Grief Refuge. It's happening this August 15th through the 18th near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This retreat will include grief-focused activities and sessions curated and facilitated by compassionate grief experts, including me. It's a space where your grief, your loss, and your sibling will be honored and understood. In addition to grief discussions, education, support, and togetherness, you will be tapping into your continuing bond with your sibling through multiple activities, such as going on a photo walk or sensory exploration and mindful walks. In our remembrance ceremony, you'll have further opportunity to honor your sibling, share your story, and hear about others' siblings. For more information, visit thebrokenpack.com/retreat or just head to thebrokenpack.com and click the Sibling Loss Retreat link in the top menu. Spaces are limited, so secure your spot today. Let's walk this path of sibling grief together. Now back to the show. And it sounds like it became too much, I'm guessing, between you processing your own grief and trauma and still working, that you did need these quiet times to reflect and move forward.
Yeah. I'm learning every week, every month. There's, even now, 3 years on, there's different waves of the emotions. There's different things that come up. I'm also going through the twins. So I was, 46 and I'm now 49. And not only navigating such a devastating loss with Stuart, perimenopausal as well. So dealing with all the symptoms of going through the perimenopause and managing a chronic illness. I've got Crohn's disease, being a mum to twins, an older mum at that, and trying to work and keep everything together. And it's been very exhausting, very draining. Mm-hmm. And a huge journey to work my way around. And I think it's only now that I'm realizing, wow, just how far I've come, what I've achieved, and now where I'm going. And it's, I can't almost sometimes believe that I've done all that I've done. It sounds so much, but I know that Stuart is behind all of this. He's giving me that encouragement, support. He's still very much here, looking over me, protecting me, guiding me. And I really do believe that. And I think that's the key to keeping going and very much living life to the full, because I'm living life not only for me, for my children, for my family, but for him as well. And I'm determined to make sure it's a really good life.
How would you say you're doing with that?
Good, I hope.
Good.
Yeah, I think there's good days and there's not so good days. And yep, there's obstacles and challenges that come my way. And some days I can deal with them and some days I can't. And if I want to have a good cry, I will have a good cry. I've just recently joined a drama group. And that is so powerful. Again, creativity, being able to express. Drama is, yeah, something I'm definitely going to continue with because that's helping me so much. I've not done any counseling for myself. I know counseling helps a lot of other people, but for me, just didn't feel right. And it still doesn't feel like for me, that's not for me, for my grief journey. I find doing things like this podcast, writing, talking online, and creative, active things such as drama. I go to dance classes, or even just being outdoors with nature. I've learned that gardening is very therapeutic. I was never much into gardening. My brother absolutely loved it, and now I can see why. It's almost like I'm exploring the world and finding different ways to move forwards. And for me, that's much more helpful than going to a weekly sort of counseling.
It sounds like you're doing a lot of the things that we encourage patients and clients to do, right? To get out there and find connection with the loved one, but also how to connect to life and living. And and it sounds like you're doing that. It's interesting that you as a therapist wouldn't go to counseling, but...
but then I don't do counseling as my therapy. I do a different type of trauma work where I'm doing psychosensory therapy. It's very much using the senses. So I'm doing touch therapy, hypnosis, some NLP. So it's very much working with the subconscious mind and doing that. And that the technique that's helped me a lot, the havening techniques. I don't know if you've heard of havening techniques. It comes from America, Dr. Ronald Rudin in New York. And for me, that helped me so much with the flashbacks, because even though I didn't see how my brother passed, it was described to me by the police. And I then created in my mind how he must have looked, everything he went through. I had so many images. And then once I'd thought of those, I then wasn't able to remove them. They were playing out over and over again and other stuff. And so I use the havening techniques to clear that, which is so powerful because it does, it removes those images, but it removes the emotions as well. And that has been so effective. And I know I still have a lot of people in my community who are still suffering so badly with PTSD and the effects. And it's just heartbreaking that they feel that the help isn't there for them. It's devastating. I really feel for them and wish that they could find ways to help them.
Yeah. Ellie from our last season explained to me that how counseling works there in the UK and how different it is than what I would have expected given the national healthcare system you have. So even though you've chosen not to pursue it in that way, it sounds like access to care is difficult.
Oh, it is. There's more and more charities now starting up and offering support. I'm an ambassador for a charity called Suicide & Co, and they are offering free, I think it's 12 sessions of counseling in the UK. It used to be you had to wait 6 months before you could access it. Not the first 6 months of your loss, but now they're opening up the resources. So it's immediate. You've got the support there. But I know there's a list that they are
doing. What's it called?
Suicide & Co.
Suicide & Co. I'll put it in the show notes if kids are unable to
They are doing a lot of work. They're creating an app as well to provide resource exercises and techniques, helping with sleep and anxiety. And again, putting links to podcasts on there. book mm-hmm. reviews as well, so that all the resources are in one place and you can access your free counselling. And it's so much needed.
Mm-hmm.
What they're hoping to achieve is to be what I needed at the time, the one-stop shop mm-hmm. to go to, that everybody knows the name, so that there is that support there
mm-hmm.
and they can help you navigate what you need to do. There's another charity called SOBS, which is Survivors of Bereavement by Suicide. They're called SOBS, but again,
SOBS. I'll look that up and add that to the show notes too.
SOBS. Yeah, SOBS. And again, they're a charity. They've been around for a lot longer and they do amazing work as well. But they're very much peer-to-peer support.
Mm-hmm.
That's all about community. So it's not counseling. It's very much you connect with others and you meet up once a month or online or in person and you share that way. So again, they are very much needed and they both need mm-hmm. lots of funding. Suicide & Co is quite new, so it wasn't around when I lost Stuart. I think they set up in 2021. But I'm finding actually the more I go online now, there's more and more charities coming through and fund trusts and foundations and people setting up in their loved ones' names and offering different types of resources and support. But I still feel that it needs to just be somehow grouped together in one place
mm-hmm.
because it can be so overwhelming and confusing,
mm-hmm.
especially in those early days where you just want somebody to say, do this bit, I'll help you with that bit. This is what you need to do, rather than you trying to work out, what does this mean?
Right.
Who do I turn to? I can't understand it. And then I can remember being in tears so much because I didn't understand
mm-hmm.
some of the things I was reading
mm-hmm.
and working out, what does this mean? How do I do this? And that just adds to the stress and the trauma, doesn't it?
Right. And it also distracts you from the grieving process.
Yes, which I found, again, I think the first year was very much spent in trauma land.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm only really just the last year starting mm-hmm. to grieve, which
yeah.
people outside of the suicide loss community can't really understand. They mm-hmm. think you lose your loved one and that's when the grieving process starts. And then a lot of people think, right, after a year, you're done. It's not yeah. like that at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely not like that.
3 days of a funeral and you should be fine. Just yeah. go back to it. Yeah.
No, it's grief. For me, grief is forever.
Exactly.
Yeah. And having to deal with the complexities of all the other emotions and the whys mm-hmm. and the unanswered questions. And it was so complicated and it's heavy and there definitely needs to be more support.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that from both the bereaved by suicide, but also sibling loss. And then you add those things together and you've got this double yeah. whammy of disenfranchisement.
Yeah.
I've lost people to suicide, but not my sibling. Was there anything else you wanted to share about either sibling loss or suicide loss?
I think with losing my brother, with sibling loss, we do find ourselves in this little bubble, this group mm-hmm. that only we can relate to, especially because he's my only sibling. It does feel very isolating
mm-hmm.
because, as I said, he's my older brother. He is my older brother. He's always been there. And now that he's around in spirit, I do feel alone. I do feel mm-hmm. abandoned, I guess mm-hmm. is the word. But I know that that wasn't his fault. I feel so deeply sad. That's how his life ended. I just felt so much sadness for him and how he must have been feeling. And I love him so much. And I know that he's around. I know he's listening to this chat right now. And he knows I love him. And I know he's okay. He's safe. And My promise to him is that I will ensure that his niece and nephew have the best life ever and that I'll look after mum and dad for him. When I'm at the school gates waiting to pick up the children or out and about with friends and they're talking about their brother or sister and your little piece of my heart just feels a little pull on it.
Mm-hmm.
Just thinking, gosh, but in some ways, I'm pleased that they have their siblings. I'm pleased mm-hmm. that they have their brother or sister, or they've still got that physical connection and relationship. And I just know that I've still got the bond with my brother. And I'm so blessed that he is my brother. So yeah, I just think sibling loss is something that's not really understood by enough people. And I think when you can connect with others who are going through the same experience, it does help.
Thank you. I would agree with everything you said. Can we talk a little bit about what it's like to see your parents aging, knowing that your sibling isn't physically here to help with those tasks?
Yes. He lived closer to them than mm-hmm. I do. And he was very much the one that would be over there whenever they needed anything. He would see them every week, check they're okay, helping out with household chores or anything that needed repairing. He would be the one to do it. And knowing that I can't do that as easy because I'm further away, but also I have the restrictions with my young children. I can't mm-hmm. just, and knowing that they are aging, they're in their late 80s, there's going to come a time when one of them will pass, and to think that I'm dealing with that on my own,
mm-hmm.
the child, and it should have been Stuart and I doing that together, supporting mm-hmm. one another and dealing with all the things involved. I don't think too much about that. I'm focusing on the now mm-hmm. and the present with them and making sure that they see me being okay. The last mm-hmm. thing I want is for them to worry about me. I really do want them to see me being happy. Obviously, how can I be happy when I've lost my brother?
As happy as you can be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And ensuring that they see the twins as much as possible with their mm-hmm. grandchildren. And I know that Stuart will find a way for when that time comes, when our parents do pass, that he will find a way to help me through that. But mm-hmm. I think in some ways, though, knowing that he's gone on ahead of them, it will help me to deal with their loss. So mm-hmm. I know that they're not alone when they pass mm-hmm. over, that he's there and they are reunited again. So in a way, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And they are reunited and they are together. And then it kind of then makes me feel even more abandoned and alone because
right.
they're together and then suddenly I'm on my own, but I'm not, because obviously I've got my own family, my mm-hmm. children, my husband. So it's just processing that in my head. And I think our bond, our little family unit, is always together. No matter where mm-hmm. we are, whether we are physically here or in spirit, we're always connected and our bond yeah. will never be broken.
Thank you for putting words to all of that, because I think it is a confusing thing to try to explain to people, because I'm in a similar situation. My parents are their late 70s and my brother was the only other sibling as well. And so it is this like weird, there's some relief in knowing that they'll
yeah.
reconnect, but your family of origin is now broken and
yeah,
you'll be the last one standing.
Yeah,
likely, right? We don't know, but
yeah.
Yeah. And it's not to say that our families now don't mean as much. Of course, that's not true. It's just, it's a hard place to navigate.
It is.
Yeah. So thank you for putting words to that. Before we wrap up, I was wondering if you wanted to share any favorite memories of you and Stuart or of him.
Gosh. I think I have a lot of childhood memories that I absolutely love. I can remember our childhood home. We had a lovely house with a stream running through the garden. And we spent so much time in that stream, just walking barefoot and jumping across from side to side. And that's really beautiful. In fact, where Stuart passed, he was very close to a little stream. And in some ways, I feel that he found that place because there was a little stream there, because it reminded him of our childhood, which again was a way of him saying our childhood was the best childhood ever. And it was like it was just a little message. I get something from that. But I think one of my most favorite memories was in 2016, just after the twins were born. And my little girl was about a month and a half, and it was coming up to Christmas. And I took them round to our parents' house, and Stuart was there. And he held my little girl in his arms, and he looked down at her, and she looked up, and she had the most beautiful smile on her face. And it was the first time she smiled. Uh-huh. And I captured that moment on camera. And it was the first time she smiled. And you can see the way they look at each other. She's just looking up at him in awe of my uncle's dream. And that bond has continued all the way through. And I think that's why she's so close to her uncle Stu Bear. There's definitely a connection there between them. In fact, with both of the twins, because even when I had to sit them down and explain that Uncle Stu had passed, they knew. They told me stuff which has blown my mind. And they come out with some things, and he continues through them. And I think that's so powerful. And yeah, I have such wonderful memories. As you can see, it just puts such a big smile on my face. And yeah, the bestest brother in the world.
Fantastic. Thank you for sharing all of this and talking to me today.
Thank you so much.
I look forward to staying in touch.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for listening. Our theme song was written by Joe Millwood and Brian Dean and was performed by Joe Millwood. If you would like more information on The Broken Pack, go to our website, thebrokenpack.com. Be sure to sign up for our newsletter, Wild Grief, to learn about opportunities and receive exclusive information and grieving tips for subscribers. Information on that, our social media, and on our guests can be found in the show notes wherever you get your podcasts. Please follow, subscribe, and share. Thanks again.
You're second guessing, oh, you never know, you just never know.